And it is Veterans Month and continues for the rest of the month. I actually started a little early in October this year, but good to finally, I mean, scheduling this guy. It's like he has a regular job or something. To get him in studio is a great thing. My friend Keith Goodman coming in to talk about his service to our nation. I don't get you pulled close to that mic right there. You can pull it up to you. We were just talking about, and I would talk a lot with you, but the conversation we were just having, can I say that, because I was telling you about yesterday with Navy veteran Cody Aloy, who was a dog handler and clearing areas and this and that. And you said, here you are, you fought with men that you don't remember their name, but you remember the dog's name.
I remember Flyer.
Flyer
was his name. He was awesome. He was a lab. He was cool. I can't remember his handler's name to save my life.
But you remember.
But I remember that dog. I miss my dog.
Yeah. So. I mean, well, the number of, you know, I mean, it got to a point where the IEDs, you know, were such an issue, right?
And oh, yeah.
And to think, you know, what was interesting is we got a lot of technology. There's technology you probably saw there that you can't even talk about. There's technology out there that does all kind of stuff. We're in a tech world. But a dog is the best thing for smelling out an IED or anything else. A dog, not a robot or a helicopter or gunshot, a dog.
Right, and it's quicker and more accurate most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was wild. It was wild watching it because I never actually saw it in person until I was there. And it was cool to watch because you just think he was playing, but he's like,
because he's smelling it.
He's looking for it because he wants to make his handler happy.
Yeah.
That's his job, make his handler happy.
I find this thing.
He finds something.
You're like, and you're happy that he's there.
Yes, I'm very excited he found it.
Let's talk about this. So, your service to our nation, and also I start off all these conversations with a enlistment story. So, tell me, when did you decide? Were you born knowing you wanted to be a Rakusan? Do you know?
Hey, there you go. No, I wanted to be a truck driver when I was a kid. My dad was a truck driver, and I idolized my dad. So,
right.
You know, that's what I wanted to do. And he said he'd break my kneecaps. So I said, okay, I'll find something else.
All right, Dad, I see you're not down to that idea.
Not down with that. So when I went into high school, all the electives that I wanted to take were full. Well, the only one that was open was ROTC.
Okay.
So I took ROTC in high school.
So there's like so many stories I hear from y'all, veterans, like default. They're like, I mean, just Cody yesterday, he said he was going to go to the Coast Guard like his dad, but it was after Katrina, and they had flooded out the Coast Guard place, but Navy recruiter was still open, so he went to the Navy.
Right.
You were just looking for something.
I was wanting to go to shop, auto body or something.
But it was full.
Yeah, but it was full. So it was like, ROTC's open. I'm like, okay, that's cool. I can do that. Most of my family was Navy or Air Force, but I was like, it was the Army ROTC.
And you're going to do something different.
I said, okay, cool. Well, the first sergeant, the teacher there, he became like a second dad to me. He was awesome.
So, I mean, when you got, I mean, how long was it in ROTC till you went, okay, this could be me?
My senior year.
Really?
After 4 years, I was like, might as well. And I was going to go to the Air Force.
And?
But me and a buddy of mine were going to go in a buddy system for security specialist.
Okay.
And the Air Force guy said, no, thank you. You're a problem child. I got suspended a lot in high school. So they were like, we can't have you doing that. So, and then the Army guy outside the door is like, did he say you were a problem child?
I've got a job
for you, buddy. So I ended up joining the Army. It was cool.
So talk about that. So you go to the Army and talk about your travel through that. So you go in. You're how old at this point? You're senior?
I was 18.
18. What's next?
Well, I went to Fort Benning, Georgia. Infantry.
Like so many of y'all do.
Yeah, you know, Sand Hill, it's a welcoming place, I guess. But I actually had fun. I mean, it was hard. It was the hardest thing I'd ever done at that point. Mm-hmm. But not even a joke, my drill sergeant sent me for a psyche eval in boot camp. I thought he was kidding. I thought it was just, you know.
He's just messing with you.
And I said, I got back. Because I went down there with my sick call slip.
Yeah,
and he's like, the guy said, is he serious? I'm like, I don't know. He's never told me a joke, so I'm assuming he's serious. And he's like, just go back. Are you crazy? And I said, no, not that I'm aware of. And he's like, okay, just go back. Just hurry up and get back. So I got back. When we got done, I asked him, when I graduated, I asked him, I was like, what was that all about? And he's like, bro, I've never seen anybody enjoy boot camp. You were just always smiling. You were having fun. I'm like, I never got to do this kind of stuff. You know, I was shooting guns, kicking through doors, and going to obstacle course and stuff. It was a blast.
That should be like, that's our guy.
Yeah. Well, they were concerned. It was like nobody. Because I was the smallest guy there.
Yeah.
But it was fun.
But you liked it.
Yeah. I mean, it was everything you accomplished, it was just like, I didn't think I could do that. But I did that. So the next day you're waking up going, what am I going to get to do today? You know, throwing grenades, shooting guns. And
this is,
yeah, it was wild.
This is for me.
I mean, people don't talk about that part. Yeah, it was hard. It was really hard. It was like, I thought I was going to die most days. I seriously thought my heart's going to explode because I didn't run. I was not in the best shape. I gained 25 pounds in boot camp. I gained
did
25
you really?
Pounds.
Muscle. Probably.
Muscle is all it was. My legs wouldn't. When you get to basic, they take all your civilian clothes, all your gear.
Yeah.
And the day before graduation, they'll give it back to you. So everybody's in.
Oh, then you go put the stuff back.
Everybody's like putting it on. And I'm like,
I can't fit.
I can't get it over my thighs. My thighs have just swollen up.
That's, you know, but what you talk about it being hard, and so many of y'all and veterans, I talk about it. Recently, with what the Secretary of War with Hegseth said, as a civilian, a person did not serve looking, but. That hard thing when you went through and what we're getting back to
right,
is what growing up made me think, wow.
Yeah.
Somebody's brother or something would get back from base. I'm like, wow. Because it was a hard thing. To me, it's like and recruiting levels are up. It's better for recruiting to say something's hard than easy because you accomplish something and civilians look at you like, dude, wow.
Right.
You know?
See, that was one thing. It was a sense of pride that you made it through that.
Right.
You know?
I mean, from the outside looking at y'all, that's what makes it so cool. Like, that person did those things.
Right. Right. And it's just the beginning of something else, you know?
Yeah.
If you can get through that, let's see what else we can do.
So what did they do next when they decide, you know?
So I went to Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And you have to go to a replacement company when you first get to your first duty station.
Explain that to us.
So when you get to your first duty station, you go into like just everybody goes into one barracks or one spot.
Okay.
Till you get assigned to your unit. You'll either go to the 502nd, 187th.
Okay.
Whatever. And so you don't really know. And it was funny. When I first got there, me and another guy were talking about where do you want to go and where do you think you're going to go because you don't know.
Right.
Well, this one guy had been there for a little while. He worked at the replacement company. He goes, look, as long as you don't go to 187th, you're all right. So as long as you don't go to 3rd Battalion, I mean, if you go to 187th, just don't go to 3rd Battalion. I'm like, okay. Well, 2 days later, I got my order, and it was 3rd Battalion, 187th. I'm like, right on. Okay, cool. Yeah, this is par for the course.
And that is, for people who don't know.
Rockesons, man. The Rockesons are the best.
And the Rockesons, we're going to come back and talk about this. The Rockeson, the name famous. It's a name given by another army to people that purposely jumped out of airplanes and attacked them. We'll continue our conversation with veteran Keith Goodman right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right now, 118 FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have y'all here, and good to have my buddy Keith in studio. We're talking out of the places the guy told you don't want to go.
Yeah,
that's where you went.
That's where I ended up seeing on my paper.
You know, and two of y'all I know, and one of my good buddies. Another of you Rockesons. That comes from what? The umbrella. What is the story behind that?
When they saw the Rockesons jumping into Korea, that's what they thought it looked like. Umbrellas come falling from the sky, and that's what it loosely translates into.
Deadly damn umbrellas.
Right, yeah.
So you go, and now you're in. Now you're.
I mean, that's the story.
Yeah.
How true it is, I don't really know. I mean, that's the story that was told to me years ago. So
it carries some freight going forward,
yeah.
You know. So you go, when do you start jumping out of airplanes?
I did not.
You didn't?
No, we went to an air assault instead of airborne. It's still classified as an airborne unit, but we come out of helicopters. And I'll guarantee you, air assault school is harder than airborne school.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
So I mean,
it's the toughest 10 days in the Army, they say. I mean, my platoon sergeant, when I got to a reserve unit, he was airborne. He kept making jokes. And I was like, I'll tell you what, you go to air assault school, and tell me how easy it is. See which one was easier. He failed it the first time.
Wow.
He had to go back a second time.
So as teaching,
never made another joke.
Well, that's a good way to end it.
Yeah.
And you talk about too your 3 years of active service. You were saying to be doing the news break, some of the really not a ton happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't do anything. It was peacetime. I got out in 99 off active duty. Nothing happened.
And then
so
would you
9/11 happened? I was like, hey, here we go. Yeah. Let's go reenlist. So I reenlisted, but I got talked into I went to the recruiting station in Daphne.
Okay.
Because I was just driving by, and I was like, I'm just going to go reenlist. I was like, I didn't get to do anything when I was active duty and all that training for nothing. I just want to go do something.
Right.
So he said, look, looked at my DD-214. He's like, oh, you're a rock star. I was like, yeah. He goes, hey, I got something better for you. Let's do this. Go check this unit out. So I was like, what is that? So I went and checked it out, and it was awesome. It was something new the reserves were going to do. It was special operations support for, like, Rangers, Special Forces, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, they didn't have a budget. It was just whatever you wanted to do. You want this school, go.
Right.
So I was like, yeah, that's cool. So after a couple of years of training, we actually got called to go to Afghanistan.
So you deployed? What year did you deploy to Afghanistan?
2006. Yeah.
So now this thing you've been wanting to do, you're going there, and you show up in Afghanistan in 2006, man.
Oh, yeah. It was wild.
That's a wild year.
Yeah, it was a lot. Just getting the briefings when you first get there, you go
into Bagram. Where'd you go in?
Well, I had to go to Kentucky first to get training. the wild, wild Kentucky.
Yes.
But to get training on special operations vehicles, things they use that the regular Army doesn't use. I was a mechanic. I was an infantry on active duty. Blew my knee out, moved to the motor pool, which was the best
move
ever.
And this man can fix anything.
I try.
Yeah, you can.
But we went, moving to the motor pool was the best move ever because having the infantry and then the maintenance background, it was awesome. So learned to do that. Then we went to Fort Bragg for a while.
Okay.
Then we went the 18-hour flight through Germany and Turkey and all the stands to get there.
Right.
And then you get all the briefings. You got briefings of what to do and what not to do and all that stuff. Then we get in Bagram. And you're walking around saluting half the day because every officer is there. It's like you're always saluting. So we got all the talks of, you want to know what you're going to do.
Close that mic. There you go.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. You want to know what you're going to do, and you ask the stupid questions because I'm just a specialist at the time. I'm like, hey, when do we get to go do all the cool things I see in the movies?
You ask them.
Yeah, I'm like, hey, all the stuff. He's like, you're not going to do that. That the Colonel Bulldog. He ran for Congress. Colonel Bulldog, he's like, yeah, you're not going to be doing that. You're a reservist. This is the first time reserves have deployed with special operations. You're not going to die on my watch.
Okay.
So you'll be right here in this little bay fixing trucks when they bring them in. Okay. Well, how'd that
go?
After about 3 weeks of us reservists showing up, their active duty mechanics, he's like, okay, so we got this thing we need you to go fix. So go out here with this team and go. So we go. Just ended up staying. Was supposed to go to a firebase for 2 weeks to fix some motorcycles, ATVs, and a couple trucks, and I ended up staying the next 6 months.
At that firebase.
Major Hill was like, hey, man, you just want to stay out here with us? I'm like, yeah, they gave me 2 weeks. He's like, yeah, whatever. They'll have to come get you. I ain't taking you back. I'm like, okay, cool. So I just ended up staying. Nobody questioned it.
So you're staying out of the firebase, fix it. You are the mechanic out there.
Yeah. I had three teams that I supported while I was there, and I would go on missions with them, humanitarian aid missions and stuff. Nothing too bad.
But the Army travels, even in Afghanistan, probably less in other theaters, but traveled on wheels.
Oh, yeah. And that's what I never did understand. I'm like, you got support units, but you don't have a mechanic with you all the time.
Yeah.
When they go out, they got their weapons guy, their combo guy, they're all the special forces team guys, but they don't have a mechanic with them, so I just ended up driving.
They had a driver / mechanic.
Yeah, I figured I'd go. They were gonna go do this or that, and I'm like, yeah, I'll go, I'll drive. Because the first time I met him, first time I was there, an E7 came, and he's like, hey man, I need a mechanic. I'm like, okay, cool, I'll go over there. He's like, no, I mean at the firebase. I'm like, okay. So my platoon sergeant said, you want to go with them? I'm like, yeah, that's cool. He's like, you got 2 weeks, fix everything they got, and get back. to Kandahar. I'm like, okay. Well, we got there. He just said, get in the truck. I'm like, I'm just saying, you're a weapons guy. How about you get on the gun and I'll drive? Yeah. I'm like, I'm from Alabama. We drive.
Well, yeah.
So yeah, I can drive better than I can do the 50.
And your dad told you he didn't want you to be a truck driver.
Yeah, I ended up doing it anyway. But I was like, I trust you on a gun and I trust me on a wheel
right.
a little better. So that worked out. So I just kept doing that. And it was cool. I got to meet a lot of cool people.
Yeah. I'm thinking about like critical parts of those teams. If they don't roll,
yeah,
they can't do their job.
Yeah, I never understood it. So we just did it. We got in trouble.
No.
Yeah. So I would send, I took a lot of pictures.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, I'm just going to take pictures. Well, some of the pictures got back to the people who shouldn't have seen those.
Uh-huh.
And so the National Guard got kind of mad that a reservist was out with the team guys. So the National Guard shut our unit down. 816th Forward Sport.
You got it shut down?
Yeah, they got mad because we were one other group got to go the next year, the next rotation, and then they shut our unit down. The National Guard took our
good
mission.
Good work, Keith.
Yeah, you know.
Good work, Keith.
Par for the course.
You know, another buddy of mine, Rakasan, is chiming in here as well. Fire Dog says, here you go. I'd love to just start trouble as a civilian, start trouble between branches. Fire Dog says, well, he got to shoot guns and third grenades in Army boot camp. In the Air Force, we just decided it was too hot to go outside that day, so we stayed inside, sipped some iced tea, watching TV, played some ping pong, and we had one of those Pac-Man arcade games.
Thank you for your service.
Body, Keith is an outstanding guy, great coworker, one of the best in life in his field of expertise.
Oh, Bobby.
Yeah,
Bobby's the man. He's a vet. He's a Coast Guard vet.
Thank you to him as well. So many of y'all, you know, and it is a cool thing. I've talked about our community here, and it really was shown to me during the crap that went down in Montgomery.
Right.
When I thought every part of the state would have not just South Alabama Veterans Commission, but a community like we have here, that they would come from North Alabama like that, Northeast Alabama, West Central, East, you know, that there would be. And I realized we are different here. Our veterans community is, I don't know if there's just more here or they're just not organized elsewhere, but it's not the same in the rest of the state.
It's not. It's not.
And hopefully they're trying to take the message from here out and get what we have here in other parts of the state, because I wish it didn't have to be a thing, but y'all are going to have to band together.
You know, I agree.
And make sure that y'all's voices are heard, not trampled out there. Now, from your position here, what do you tell, you know, there may be some young people listening. Or a few parents of young people thinking about their children are, you know, at that point, what do you say about enlistment now from your perspective, looking in the rear view?
I say do it, at least a short enlistment. You know, number one, it gives you a little bit of structure. I know it's kind of cliche to say serve your country and do it.
No, I don't think,
but it's true. If you don't do it, who's going to do it?
That's,
you
know, right.
When I was in Afghanistan, there was a Isaiah 6:8 was on our chow hall wall.
Okay.
And if you read that and understand it, it's whom shall I send and who will go? Here I am, send me.
Mm-hmm.
It's who's going to do it if you don't do it?
Right.
No matter who's the president, no matter who's in office, that changes.
Mm-hmm.
But your service can count for something. You don't know if you weren't, I don't even know how to put this, but if you don't do it, who's going to do it?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I mean, and that was one of my worries, you know, recruitment levels, and they kept, you know, having all these problems. And it was interesting. I mean, to me, it's not counterintuitive, but to others out there, when Hegseth comes out and says, this is going to be hard.
Yeah.
That makes, even at 53, I can't do it, but I'm like, okay, now if it's hard, I want to do this.
I was telling somebody the other day, I said, I'm far too old and my body's too broken, but I would go back. I would do it again. I would do it now if I could, but I'm too broken.
But your message is for that next generation to step up and serve. And you know, when they have an all volunteer army, I mean, this is not a given that we're going to always have full, you know, full recruitment years.
Right.
Now we've changed some things and things are coming back.
And the same thing I said when I was active duty and people complained about leadership. Well, you just got to become leadership. You got to become the guy that's in charge.
Right.
You might be a private now, but you'll be an NCO, and that's who runs the army. I don't care. I don't care what who says.
NCOs run the army.
So just become that.
Yeah.
You know? change, be the change you want to see.
It's a good thing. And it, you know, just from a civilian perspective, things we've done around this radio station are things that, way we do things is because I worked for other guys for 20 something years. I'm like, if I ever, you know, we're going to do right. it this way. And finally you're like, oh gosh, I'm the dog that caught the car.
Right.
So be that in the military and be that person, take those, you know, take those lessons and use them as a command.
Exactly. And when you get out, find you a company to work for.
Yep.
Or do your own, but find something that has like-minded people. You know, it's like where I work now, Taylor Southern Service.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it. Best place I've ever worked. There's a lot of military there, like Bobby Ackerman.
We're glad you're all on it. And, yeah. And Keith, thank you for coming in. Thank you for your service, as always, brother.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.
All right, man. Coming right back, more Midday Mobile. By the way, this discussion, all our others with the veterans, are all online at fmtalk1065.com. Just click the link for Veterans Month interviews.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Friday. Good time to check in with my buddy Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Was hanging out with him yesterday afternoon. Ron, gold and silver, how are we looking right now?
They're down a little bit on the week, which makes a good time to add to your stack. Gold is down about $17 on the day, and silver is down about 55 cents. So still performing well. Silver's right at $50 an ounce, and gold's about $4,058 an ounce right now. Platinum, palladium are holding steady, Sean. So a lot of people are still buying it and just putting that in their portfolio as a hedging a bet that maybe the car market will take off before too long. And, of course, platinum and palladium will start creeping up once the new car sales start taking off again.
Can you explain to folks that hadn't heard us talk about that before, why is that?
It's because the main use with palladium and platinum is catalytic converters and jewelry, just a little bit of industrial, but mainly jewelry, which isn't super popular, by the way, so not a lot of it gets consumed. Mainly catalytic converters. Before the catalytic converters, platinum was couple hundred dollars an ounce. It was a metal everybody ignored. Palladium too, they were just very inexpensive metals. And then of course, once they found out, scientists found out platinum and palladium could both be used to reduce pollution in catalytic converters, that took off. Also did the amount of thefts where people were cutting people's catalytic converters off cars. Yeah. Which is a bad idea. The stuff is toxic because all the pollutants and stuff it's doing its job is toxic and cancer causing. So I hate to use the word morons, but that's what
they are.
People doing
yeah.
that. They
yeah.
were cutting those open and exposing themselves to toxic substances. So not a good idea, folks. I mean, earn your money the respectable way.
That's right. And just watching this, the more new cars, the more platinum and palladium used as it go up in value. Also,
in value.
Yeah, and you know, you always have been very conservative and fair about this, talking about precious metals being part of a bigger portfolio and a hedge, and you still do that. But I would just want to throw this in, that they've performed like machines over the last couple of years. I mean, it has been, just a year's time, the return on gold and silver has been fantastic.
Yeah, it's been very good. But it's not no reason for anybody to cash out of their stock portfolio and throw it into precious metals. I know stocks are taking a beating right now, and everything's kind of down. I mean, a little bit mm-hmm. in turmoil. But that's not the time to sell your stuff, folks, unless you know something about a certain stock or a company that nobody else knows and you need to dump that stock. Go long-term on that stuff. That's unless you're retired, then, of course, that's a whole different story. But if you're younger, somebody like Sean's age, I mean, you got plenty of time. Ride that stuff out. Don't stare at it every day, and it'll do its job in the long run.
See, it's the wisdom that we get from Ron. And also, I think we tell folks that we're going to be out there with y'all in the store coming up on the 10th of December. So that's going to be fun.
We'll have some giveaways, and we have a raffle going on where people can guess how many pennies are in this big jar we filled up, and we're going to be giving away platinum, gold, and silver, first, second, and third place based on, you know, who's the closest. So we have a first place, second place, and third, and we'll do that drawing, or I guess official counting, probably right before Christmas. We might even have to have you by to verify the official count, Sean.
I'll do something like that. I'll wear a top hat, make it look official.
That'll look great.
Tell folks how to find you.
We're located at 2204 Government Street in Midtown Mobile. They can find us on the web at mobilebaycoins.com or give us a call, 251-725-1590.
Hey, thank you, Ron.
You're welcome, Sean.
All right, there he goes. And yeah, we'll see y'all out there. It's always fun to go out right before Christmas, and I do a little shopping and do a little radio show. That's going to be December 10th. All right, another thing coming up a little sooner here, and it is that time of year. It's a harbinger when we start talking about the Turkey Trot for Hope, and joining me, Shelby Wade, to talk more about it. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.
So for the uninitiated, let's give them the, what is the Turkey Trot? What's the gobble wobble, all this good stuff? What are y'all doing, and who's benefiting?
Yeah, so the Turkey Trot for Hope is a certified 5K, and the Gobble Wobble is actually a fun run.
That's my speed,
so, yeah, me too. So that's just 1 mile. So if you're not up for the whole 5K, there's a fun run, and it benefits Rappahope, which is a children's charity for kids with cancer. So it is all about the childhood cancer journey and just bringing joy to them through camp experiences.
Tell them about programs. The camp that that people may, I don't know, I mean, you had to be under a rock, but if you don't know about Camp Rappahope, I mean, this is like kids fighting childhood cancer get to do regular camp stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. We do camp all year round. A lot of people think it's just in the summer, but we do retreats all year. So we just actually got finished with one in early November. So it's basically any child that has been diagnosed at any point in their life is welcome to come, ages 7 to 17. And they get to do normal camp things and be a normal kid. And
that's what's so cool about it, y'all. That's always made me smile about it. It's not like it's some, restrict. I mean, they're doing the stuff that all the other kids are doing.
Oh, yeah. Everything we have is tailored so that they are all able to experience everything. So, I mean, they're jumping in the lake. They're riding horses, ziplining, all the fun stuff. We make it very accessible.
It's awesome. Now, to benefit, we're talking about the 5K and more by speed, the gobble wobble.
Mm-hmm.
this is a tradition for a lot of folks, not just for individual runners, but families come out for this.
Oh, yeah. Very big family event.
And dress up.
Yes.
In ridiculous costumes.
Yeah. We actually have awards just for that. So best Thanksgiving costume. I think
people
last
are running as turkeys, y'all.
Oh, absolutely.
They dress as a turkey and they're running.
Yes.
And the nice thing too, like I've always talked about, is if you do a run in the morning, you can eat like triple helpings.
That's the rule. Yeah.
Like I'm going to get more of that because I ran.
Yes.
Now this happens on what time in the morning?
So the race actually starts at 8 o'clock,
okay,
and registration closes at 7:30 the day of. So you can register.
But this is Thursday.
Yes, yeah. On Thursday. So you can register online right now, but you can also register in person up until 7:30, and then race starts at 8.
Do we get t-shirts?
Yeah. Well, t-shirts are, we did have a deadline for shirts, but we might have some left over. So if you get there early enough on Thanksgiving, we might have some available for purchase.
But the better thing to do is go ahead and do that ahead of time.
Yes,
and so
definitely.
Website is?
Rappahope.org.
Okay. Rappahope.org. Go there, get signed up, get out, get the family, dress like turkeys.
Yes.
Although I think it's funny, if like one person would be the turkey, the other one dressed like a pilgrim.
Oh yeah,
like
last year we had a full Thanksgiving meal. A family dressed up as a full Thanksgiving meal. So
okay, so creativity goes a long way in this, and once again, it benefits Rappahope and the camps that are so very special. All right, well, good luck, and we'll see you out there. On you said first race starts at
8 a.m. Thanksgiving Day.
And then you can eat triple servings.
Absolutely.
Shelby, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
All right. We'll get you more links, too, if y'all need those to check out the race. But that is happening on Thanksgiving Day. And you can just tell the family, because you ran, you get to eat triples. All right. Be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Top 147, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. That's my buddy Trey. You can get something booked right now or get something booked for next week. You got family coming in for Thanksgiving. Need to get some junk out of the way. Well, my buddy's been doing it 18 years in Mobile and Baldwin County, and it's easy to set that appointment, too. Like I've said in the past, it is a good old-fashioned appointment. None of these, like, you got to stay home all day from work things. No. They find the day you want to do this, the time you want to do this, and they set an appointment. And you show up, they're there, you point at the stuff you want gone. It could be at your house, could be a storage unit, office, anywhere. Big stuff, too. Like, not just stuff inside your house. You got to above ground pool you want to get rid of, or storage building. I mean, they can take big projects like that on as well. But you got to get that appointment set, get them to come out and check out what junk you need to get rid of. It's 1-800-GOT-JUNK. I mean, the phone number is the name, 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And go to the website, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Get Trey and the crew to come see you pretty soon, even before the folks get here next week. Less than a week away from Thanksgiving. Getting excited. Like I told you earlier in the week, I have taken the reins of Thanksgiving this year for the first time. So it's going to be a low country boil, traditional. Why not? You know, go seafood with it. C.P. Carl said, my father had always said, this is back towards Fire Dog, I think. My father always said that the Air Force is the only branch of the military that issues pajamas in boot camp. I love to just get y'all all, you know, just picking on each other. And I, as a civilian that didn't serve, I just stand back and go, look at there. Mom Donnie, not there yet. I guess sometime this afternoon, Mom Donnie and Trump. I think it'll be interesting. Like Trump holds these kind of, it is. I mean, think about how he does these pressers. Like he sits people down and they're talking like what you would think in the past would be like a behind closed doors, but it's out front. They talking about issues or whatever. Then take some questions from the press. All we need is like an in-house band there in the Oval Office, and maybe the president sits behind, you know, his desk there and has like top 10 lists or something like that. But yeah, we'll see. Mom Donnie today. It has not come yet. And I'll give you alert when it's up. By the way, this story, there are a couple SNAP benefit stories here, a couple of them together. I heard Dan and Dalton talking about this one earlier in the week, and I hadn't seen it till Dalton found it and was reporting on it, that our fair state of Alabama, so we talk about SNAP use, and then we talk about SNAP fraud, okay? This came out, they reported on it earlier this week, that data coming in from USDA's Food and Nutrition Service shows Alabama leads the nation with more than 26,000 stolen SNAP benefit claims. Remember the effect that they were putting even PSAs out from state government earlier this year, I think? Maybe it was earlier this year, about news stories coming out about the number of people in Alabama that had fraud with their SNAP benefits. Alabama leads, and this is not per capita. That was the other thing that kind of blew my hair back when I heard the guys talking about it this week. It is not per capita. So 26,000 stolen SNAP benefit claims for Alabama, California, 25,000, New York, 25,000. In other words, not per capita, just overall, Alabama is the SNAP fraudiest state in the nation. It says nationwide, there were more than 226,000 fraudulent SNAP benefit claims. And I know a lot of people are going to go, well, that's not even all of it. Maybe, but this is what came out from USDA. It said 226,000 fraudulent SNAP benefit claims and more than 691,000 unauthorized transactions have been approved. If we know they're unauthorized, why did we approve them? But fraudulent transactions are categorized as purchases that SNAP recipients did not authorize, often the result of card skimming, cloning, or other forms of electronic theft. I tell you what. We look at ways to right-size government, and you'll get the hue and cry about changing programs. But maybe, just maybe, we start off with going after the fraud here. Listen to what it cost us, we the taxpayers. The stolen benefits cost, and I love it, the story is it cost the government, you know, and we the people, more than $102 million in the first quarter of this fiscal year. One quarter, $102 million. Up from $69.4 million in the previous quarter and $31.9 million during the same period a year earlier. That's a threefold increase? Wow. Figures cover only the first quarter of fiscal year 2025 and exclude states that have yet to report full data. But I would imagine, I mean, looking at how far in the lead Alabama is, why here? I don't know, but why here? At that number. Not that I'm not like, oh, I'm surprised there's fraud. No, I'm not surprised there's fraud. But think about the population of the state of California or the state of New York. And think about we're 4 million something here, but we have more than the other states. It's staggering. speaking of those kind of stories, I don't know if you've heard more on this, of the way the money, not only fraud that is going on here, but the fraud that is being used to channel money to terrorist groups. So this story is up a couple different places here today. Minnesota taxpayer dollars, this one's from, this is from Fox News. Minnesota taxpayer dollars funneled to Al-Shabaab. Remember the Al-Shabaab terror group, like, kidnapped the girls at the school and killed the people? Right, that one. Taxpayer dollars, our money, taxpayer going to a terrorist group directly, said a new investigation found that Minnesota taxpayer dollars are going far beyond the North Star State's borders and ending up in the hands of Al-Shabaab, an Al-Qaeda-linked terror group. It says Ryan Thorpe and Christopher Rufo of the Manhattan Institute uncovered the web of fraud. Now, this is the people doing it. It's not even the state doing it. So the Manhattan Institute uncovered a web of fraud involving Minnesota's Medicaid Housing Stabilization Services Program, Feeding Our Future, and other organizations in a bombshell report. Thorpe and Rufo noted that in many cases, members of Minnesota's Somali community were the perpetrators of the fraud. Okay, so Americans of Somali descent, or Somalis living in Minnesota, and there's a big population, also Somalia, an area where Al-Shabaab is active, said they were the perpetrators of the fraud. They added that the federal counterterrorism sources confirmed that millions of dollars, y'all, in stolen funds were sent back to Somalia, where it went to Al-Shabaab, and that's where they got the cash. So not only is there fraud, you know, we got, I guess, the good old-fashioned fraud in Alabama, but you've got government services monies not only being defrauded, going to fight. How they must laugh at Al-Shabaab to know that American taxpayer dollars are going to fund them. Thorpe and Rufo sought to answer a bigger question when looking into the scheme. Where did the money go? As it turned out, the Somali fraud rings sent money transfers, so here's how it worked, from Minnesota to Somalia, and according to reports, approximately 40% of the households in Somalia get remittances from abroad, right? People that have left Somalia sending money back to the family, those kind of things. That's absolutely thing that happens all over. Thorpe and Rufo stated that in 2023, the Somali diaspora sent $1.7 billion to the country, which was higher than the Somali government's budget in the same year. Thorpe and Rufo discovered that the funds were being funneled then to Al-Shabaab, an Al-Qaeda-linked terror organization. Multiple law enforcement sources informed the duo that Minnesota's Somali community has sent millions of dollars through a network of money traders known as Hawalas that wound up in the hands of the terror group. I mean, so this is like the fraud that is so frustrating in the first place, but then this fraud is financing terrorists, our enemies. A confidential source told the authors of this report that the largest funder of Al-Shabaab is the Minnesota taxpayer. Think about that. It's not the Persian, not Iran, it's not Gulf states, or, you know, pick your financier of terrorism. That the biggest source of funds for Al-Shabaab is coming out of the taxpayers of Minnesota. Thorpe and Rufo, the authors here, Thorpe and Rufo, said every scrap of economic activity in the Twin Cities in America, throughout Western Europe, anywhere Somalis are concentrated, every cent that is sent back to Somalia benefits Al-Shabaab in some way. It left me slack-jawed on that one. So that's like, you got the fraud story. I mean, I'm really going to stay on this, that Alabama is the number one fraud state for, and not just per capita, I mean overall, and that's a bad thing. But then this situation in Minnesota, not only is the fraud going on, but it's going to finance terrorists. Uncle Jake texted in here, said, not sure if it still happens, but I was aware of a store in Mobile that you could get alcohol, tobacco, and gas on an EBT card. Well, Uncle Jake, you know what, that's something, if that's going on, do your part as a citizen for all of us and report them to the sheriff's department. I mean, straight up, that's fraud. We just got a good old-fashioned fraud here. We don't have, that I know of yet, fraud that is financing Al-Shabaab. It's out of, I mean, this is the Doge work that needs done, right? At the same time, they need to do it everywhere, but this money going to finance terror is unbelievable. All right, I'm out of here for today. Paul Feinbaum takes over in just a second. I'll say tomorrow, too, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. I hope to have Captain Richard Rutland on with me. Not only a great captain, we're going to talk about some Delta fishing this time of year, but also U.S. Navy veterans, so we'll double up on that one for Veterans Month. All right, y'all have a great Friday. Talk to you soon.